Hey everybody, welcome to Pockets, where Fabian, my dear friend, and I explore the pockets of movies and life. Believe it or not, this is our season finale.
Ooh.
Most podcasts...
Is it going to be a cliffhanger?
You never know.
It might be.
Most podcasts go for like 7 to 10 episodes, but Fabian and I brought you 17 episodes before we decided that this should be the end of the season. In about 3 weeks or so, we're going to start up our season 2. So I hope you hang in and join us when that happens. So our theme today is 1984, the year...
The book... The
everything about
that
it.
Era, all of it.
The era, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because what happened in 83? Madonna, her first album came out in 83, which is why, you know, her music was probably still coming out in 84. But I was wondering why nothing came up in my research in 84 for her, but it was 83 that her album came out.
But, you know, it was 83 where her album came out for everyone. It was like late 82 in New York, in Los Angeles, she was already doing her singles and going to the little clubs and dancing. And,
Fame.
And if you hadn't seen her, everyone assumed she was black. Everyone assumed she was a black
girl. Really?
Oh, yeah.
What?
The music was not, there was no white woman singing like she was singing. There was nothing that you could compare. It wasn't like Blondie.
Oh my gosh, now that you say
it wasn't like Blondie.
You're right.
It wasn't
like Elvis and the Beatles in a way. Yeah. No. Well, no, the fact that nobody was singing like them.
Yeah. No one was singing the way Madonna was. No white girl was. There it is. You're an angry lady.
I'm not really.
Okay. But yeah, I thought the same thing, you know, looking at what the Billboard top 20 of 1984, not one Madonna song.
I know. Not one.
Not
wow,
one. But
Faye.
Two Cyndi Laupers.
Well.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, listen, guys, before we continue, I always do this, but I just want you to know Fabian and I are well aware of the audio issues that we've been having, and we just want you to know that we maybe fixed it, and if not, trust me that I promise you I will spend the next 3 weeks making sure in season 2 there will be none of it.
Yes.
All right. So this is. I'm just going to give you a brief history of things that happened in 1984, which is kind of interesting when you live through it, you're not thinking about it, but then when you encapsulate it like this,
it's true.
Indira Gandhi was assassinated on that day, October 31st, 1984. He was the prime minister. I'm so sorry, Indira, of course, and she was assassinated by her Sikh bodyguards.
Isn't that crazy?
In retaliation for Operation Blue Star, a military operation she ordered to remove Sikh separatists who had holed up in the Golden Temple of Amritsar.
Isn't that insane? I had no idea that that's why she was assassinated.
No, I didn't either. In India, on December 2nd, 1984...
They had a bad fucking end of the year in India.
Yeah, they
seriously.
Really did. There was a horrible gas tragedy. The world's worst industrial disaster occurred in, Bhopal. When a gas leak at the Union Carbide pesticide plant resulted in the release of toxic methyl...
Isocinate.
Gas. Fabian's the better enunciator. Killing thousands and why am I making a joke? I'm so sorry, everybody. Killing thousands and injuring hundreds
Isn't
of
that
thousands
crazy?
More. You're right. It really was a bad year. And you think about like just the 80s in general, like even here, like it was, you know, the gas crisis had ended here in the late 70s, but things were still very oppressive. There was the Vietnam veterans that were still like, you know, dealing with the war. It just wasn't like it wasn't like the 90s, which I compare to the roaring 20s, you know, like it was just, it was rough. The 1984 Winter Olympics were held in Yugoslavia, Sarajevo, now Bosnia and Herzegovina, from February 8th through the 19th of 1984. The Apple Macintosh computer was introduced on January 24th of that year.
I mean, this is huge.
That changed the whole world. I mean, we hold computers in our hands.
And I don't think people knew at that moment. I mean, people who knew computers and knew what
they
was...
Knew, right,
they knew,
right.
But we had no idea. No one had any
idea
that it was going to be.
What it was going to do. Yeah, right, exactly.
Especially Apple specifically.
Exactly. Sadly, the Challenger disaster occurred on January 28th of that year.
I remember
the
exactly
space,
where I was.
Where
I just
were
want you?
You
to know. I went to work. I was living with my first boyfriend, a cheating Leo, And I was working at the bank in Brentwood. And I hated my job. I hated all of it. I took that job because he told me to. And I went to work, and it was such a somber, somber day. And I'm like, who died? I literally said that. Like, what is going on? Oh. Who died? And yeah.
I remember my brother Andrew, he was watching it live. And I at school that day?
That must have been a
mindfuck. But he said it was mind-numbing. Like, yeah. That you're just thinking, he was just mindlessly watching it. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, yeah. Like, it was obvious.
And it was quickly, right after. It was like it was within seconds.
Within a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 73 seconds after liftoff, killing all 7 crew members on board, including school teacher Krista McAuliffe. Which is so sad because remember, like, she was one of the first civilians that ever
and
went.
And all her school kids, all the kids in the world were watching it. Yeah.
And yeah, brutal. Now, this is interesting. Oh, the summer. Okay.
Right.
So the 84 Summer Olympics were held in Los Angeles from July 28th through August 12th. These Olympics were notable for the Soviet Union and several Eastern Bloc countries boycotting the Games in retaliation for the U.S.-led boycott of the 1980 Moscow Olympics. God, it's just a pissing match.
It was a really great time to be living in Los Angeles, though, 1984.
Was it?
Oh, yeah, it was great. Everything was Olympics.
Much was happening.
Everything. People all collected those buttons, and my
and
dad
where,
was
where
so
where were
into
the Olympics held?
In the most amazing stadium, Coliseum, that's there. The architecture was so beautiful. It was so nicely done.
Oh, wow.
It's old.
It's still there?
I think so. I've seen they've used it for photography, like, for, you know, photographing.
And like field hockey games?
I don't know. I don't know what happened to it still.
I was a goalie on field hockey.
It is still there. It is.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
The AIDS virus was isolated in 1984. French researchers identified the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, as the cause of acquired immune deficiency syndrome, which is AIDS, leading to significant advancements in understanding and combating the disease. Diet Coke was introduced that year on August 9th as a sugar-free alternative to its flagship cola drink. The Cosby Show premiered. I don't know if we should say any more, you know.
But you know what's interesting is the Cosby Show premiered in 1984. How is that possible in September 20th of 1984?
Because all the shows premiere in September.
But Lisa Bonet had already done Angel Heart. Wasn't Angel Heart 1984? Maybe it wasn't.
I don't think it was, Fabe.
Maybe
I don't
it wasn't.
Think it was. I think
no,
it was
it had
more
to be,
like 87.
Yeah, because she'd already been on the... Okay,
yeah,
because
she was young in the beginning.
You're right, you're right.
Lastly, guys, the Ethiopian famine, unfortunately. Ethiopia experienced a devastating famine in 1984, exacerbated by political instability and drought, leading to a widespread hunger and death. And that's the one thing, you know, how I think, you don't know, not all of you know, but I love Audrey Hepburn. And one of the impacts in my life was her as the UN ambassador to Ethiopia. The Live Aid concert was organized by Bob Geldof to help with that situation. That was very sad, very horrifying.
It was.
I mean, there's famines today, but I'm not sure if they even equate to that. But anyway, so you're up and you're going to tell us all about Orwell's 1984.
I remember reading that, of course, in high school. And
same.
Loving it. And just, it was kind of mind-blowing, too. But what I really remember is that same year, in 1984, that summer, I believe, was the movie, 1984. That I went to see with my then boyfriend.
The Leo.
And that Halloween, that very Halloween, 1984, guess what we dressed up as? Because, you know, the soundtrack, the original soundtrack was done by Eurythmics, which a lot of people don't know. And then when they released the movie, they decided not to use the Eurythmics. Eurythmics still released their album. It has Sex Crime, what a great song. Julia... I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful soundtrack. It's kind of like Laurie Anderson-esque. It's a little, you know, it's for this type of movie. Anyway, great, great movie. We went dressed, of course, as Eurythmics, and I have a very amazing...
Were you Annie Lennox?
Hell yeah. I looked incredible.
Oh my God,
I found
babe.
The most amazing jacket. I wore a suit because I did the, you know, the Sweet Dreams look.
Yeah.
And I had the most amazing asymmetrical coat. That was expensive, and I didn't shoplift it. I'd already stopped doing that, you know, 2 years earlier.
Did you wear your red head?
Yeah, well, I had a lot of hair then, and he was a hairdresser, my boyfriend. So my hair was totally red. I looked amazing.
You have to send me pictures.
I have a picture on my phone, but we'll do that after when we're done.
I'm going to let Sunday the dog go outside because she seems to really need to. Go on.
Well, what was really interesting about the movie was incredible, and it came out at just the right time, and I thought it was really well done and really accurate. But for those very few who don't know, obviously 1984 was a dystopian novel written by George Orwell, and it was published in 1949. It's one of the most influential works of literature of the 20th century.
It really is. I mean, the book is insane.
Well, what's crazy is that it's so accurate still. At the time, it seemed, that will never happen again. Those were old civilizations, right. Old governments.
Right.
But it's pretty amazing. And the more you read these little details about it, that the novel is set in this super state of Oceania, where the ruling party, led by the enigmatic figure known as Big Brother, exercises complete control over every aspect of people's lives. The main character, Winston Smith, works for the party's Ministry of Truth. And get this, his job is to alter historical records and manipulate information to fit the party's ever-changing narrative. Does this sound familiar at all? Do you want to go to Florida? Do you want to go to the South where they're changing everything? Slavery didn't happen. They're trying to change everything.
You mentioned that history is being retold. Is that what you mean?
This is exactly right. They're trying to change anything, the truth, so that this thing in particular, it's so that white people are not held responsible or guilty for any actions that occurred.
Right. It's sad.
It is.
And I believe that Winston Smith was played by John Hurt.
He was played by John Hurt.
The amazing John Hurt.
And the main leader of them was played by Richard Burton. It was his final film because he also died
in 1984.
He died in 1984.
Gosh, he was something, that guy. I could listen to him read from the phone book.
Yeah. And totally. I loved John Hurt. I mean,
I loved John Hurt so much. I don't know why. Like, he spoke to the inside Jen that was deep and morose and, you know.
Remember him in Alien, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. The alien jumped out of him straight away.
No, he was incredible. And did you ever see The Naked Civil Servant? It was a movie version of Quentin Crisp's life. You know, he was this gay man. It's an amazing movie.
Yeah.
It's a great book. The book is incredible. But anyway, going back to the novel, the things that you can see, the similarities that are drawn now from the novel in present day scenarios include surveillance and privacy concerns. In the book, the omnipresent surveillance by Big Brother is a central theme. Modern parallels can be seen in the extensive data collection by government agencies and private corporations, concerns over the use of surveillance technologies, and debates about privacy rights. That's a daily thing.
Mm, amazing.
You know, with hacking and everything.
Yeah.
Newspeak and changing language. Orwell's concept of newspeak, a language designed to limit the scope of thought, is sometimes compared to political and media rhetoric that aims to reshape public perception or diminish the significance of certain issues. It's happening hugely now with the war in Gaza. For sure.
Oh my God, yeah.
And then
and the election too. Like,
oh, big time. This one, manipulation of information and fake news.
Yeah.
In the novel, the government constantly alters historical records to fit its narrative, reminiscent of the modern issues around fake news, misinformation, and the trustworthiness of media outlets, where they're constantly accusing each other.
I know.
Saying, no, they're lying. That's not true.
I know. And neither are perfect, Fabe. Neither outlets are perfect.
No. You know, the use of propaganda, which is huge in 1984, huge now, and the erosion of civil liberties, which is happening daily, every single day in the United States. Something else is going on. You can look at abortion rights.
I mean, don't get me started there.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. So it's scary that book was written in 1949 and it applies so much now.
You know, I had mentioned that Peter was reading a Kurt Vonnegut book written in the 60s that completely correlates to, you know, life now. And also, like, you and I were talking before we started the episode here, and I was showing you this wonderful book with Audrey Hepburn memorabilia, and your phone started talking to us because it had been listening, and you didn't even push anything.
No, it was weird.
It was really weird. Anyway.
It wasn't just the phone. It was AI specifically.
Oh, so that's even more
commenting.
Terrifying.
It was commenting on
yeah,
what we
on
had
our conversation.
Talked. It was really crazy.
Yeah.
That's not happened before. It was
that's
really weird.
It's very, really.
All right, tell me some more about John Hurt.
Okay, so Fabian and I are obviously big John Hurt fans. The movie 1984 had a profound, it was very profound experience for him. He expressed his admiration for the novel and its relevance, particularly in the context of the time in which the film was made. He often spoke about the importance of the story's message and its warning against the dangers of totalitarianism
yeah.
and erosion of individual freedoms. I laughed.
Call it the gin stutters.
There are, and there are so many stutters, I have to work on it. When I listen back to the podcast, I'm always like, can't just get your point out. But I'm like, and anyway.
Gin.
In articles from a few film magazines in 1984, Hurt has said, I know that the book profoundly affected my life when I read it at 16 in 1956. I found it easy to identify with Winston. Coming from the North myself, it can be a very stifling area. I had a decision to make in the same way that Winston had. How do I get to the oppressive place? How do I get out of this oppressive place? How could I, not even knowing what I wanted to do or what I could do, only knowing that I had to get out? It seemed a totally impossible dream. And then he went on to say that working with Richard Burton was a bonus. I remember seeing him playing Hamlet in the Assembly Room in Edinburgh when I was 13. And a very, very remarkable performance it was, too. It was the first time that I had seen someone on stage with that kind of economy and that kind of presence. Meeting him in person for the film, he turned out to be quite unlike what I had expected. I had expected from his preceding publicity that he would be much wilder, but perhaps thanks to his wife Sally, he was on excellent behavior. His enthusiasm also stemmed from his belief in the film. He, like me, had always wanted to act in 1984, and he did it, as far as I know, way, way under his normal price. I did not, however, learn techniques of acting from him, as many people supposed I would, because he's not an actor you can learn from. You cannot learn from Brando, you cannot learn from James Dean, and you cannot learn from Burton, because they are what they are. The skills that they have are unlearnable. I thought that was just insanely
it
cool
is.
To hear him talk about Richard Burton like that. I do want to mention before we move on, because we have to stick to our 1984 topic, but I don't know if you guys remember The Elephant Man, which was made in 1980, and John Hurt played John Merrick. Remember, that was just it was black and white, and
yeah.
Anthony Hopkins was
yeah.
in it, and it was I can't remember who was the woman lead. Was it Anne Bancroft? I can't remember. But Mel Brooks was the executive producer, and he was the one who hired David Lynch to direct and produce.
Crazy.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. What an opportunity for David Lynch.
I know. And Mel freaking Brooks getting in there, you know, Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
And then History of the World. He's like, fuck it, let's do something serious.
Do something.
All right. You're up, love.
You know who's another man that completely, and I know the minute you hear this name, for people my age or older, are so going to know and so have a visual of the name Patrick Nagel.
Oh my God.
He was inescapable.
I remember him.
He was inescapable. There was
if
no
you
way that you
attention.
Lived in the
right.
80s that you didn't watch. If you watched television, you read magazines.
Right.
You read Playboy specifically.
Right.
You read magazines. You watched television. You watched Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. All of those shows that were on at that time. He was the epitome of all of those things. And he was really a kind of an interesting story. He was an American artist renowned for his distinctive illustrations that epitomized the aesthetic of the 1980s. He was born in 1945, and he's best known for his stylized depictions of women, characterized by their sleek and minimalistic design, with bold contours and a limited color palette, often dominated by blacks, whites, and vibrant colors. You know, my favorites were the men. Because they were not as, there weren't as
yeah,
many
I'm not
portraits.
Even sure I remember them.
There
man.
Is one in particular. Google this when you're listening to this. Google Patrick Nagel, swimming cap man. He's wearing a swimming cap with goggles, I believe. It's so ingrained in my mind. It was so beautiful and so sexy. I loved his work.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now.
That's it.
Oh gosh, that's so like 1920s, like Art Deco.
Yeah, isn't that gorgeous?
That really
it's
is.
Beautiful.
Yes,
yeah.
Listen
but
to
he
Faye.
Was
Google
very
that.
Much influenced by the art of Art Deco and the art of the 1920s.
Yeah.
He was very influenced by Erte. He was very influenced also by Japanese art. And if you look at it closely, you can see that the style is very, very, very similar. He became most famous because he was the illustrator for Playboy magazine. So when we, you know, when they'd have articles, he was the guy that had, he was the in-house illustrator of those articles. And he'd have, you know, sexy women, and there were probably, you know, more nudes than what he did when he became
right
big. But anyway, he...
Did he pass in 1984?
He died in 1984.
Oh my gosh.
So, and you know, what's weird is that...
So he was 50 years old.
Yeah. And what's
wow.
what's crazy is that his
60. Sorry,
his work was so so inundated everywhere that he sort of became the joke. All of a sudden, he became nobody
right.
wanted anything to
right.
do with it because right. it was just so cliche in a sense. But
I loved it.
Now,
I never felt that
now
way.
Now
yeah.
it is so collectible, and it's really collectible because he died at his height. He has just begun. It wasn't even his height. He was just beginning. And there aren't very many hand-signed prints. There aren't very many hand-signed pieces that are hand-painted by him. They're highly, highly collectible. They're really...
Well, and Faye, when you say, like, you're not kidding. He was everywhere.
He was.
He
well,
was everywhere.
The thing that changed everything was him being... they chose one of his works to do for the cover of Duran Duran's Rio. And that album was the
I'm
epitome...
I'm sure you all remember that. Even
it's
I,
the epitome
that's...
of the 80s.
Yes.
That... artists, they were here, by the way, in Santa Barbara yesterday.
What?
It's the weirdest thing.
What? Just walking around?
My friend Casey, her best friend is a waitress or something, a bartender at Ye Old English Pub or whatever that's on State Street.
Yeah. Yes.
They were in there
yes.
for drinks yesterday.
Are you serious?
They were in there for drinks.
I
Isn't
was literally
weird?
Had a drink with Peter on St. Patrick's Day at that bar.
Well, they were there. So
wow.
I don't know why they're in town. We do have recording studios here. You know, Depeche Mode does the recording here, so maybe they're recording an album,
but that,
weird
what
connection.
I love is that they were slowing down on State Street and not sticking him on a Cito, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah, and that, but I bet you they are at that recording studio downtown.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Wow, that
yeah.
is so
yeah.
awesome.
I just want you also to know that I lived what my summer of 1983 doing reproductions of Patrick Nagel on T-shirts. Really
that you
huge.
Would hand paint?
Hand done, yeah.
Wow.
Fabian. And sold at a store. His was not easy. That wasn't that hard because it was so
it was
simple
pretty precise.
And light.
It was
oh, it was
pretty
the,
precise.
The shadowing, the part that with the shading in the eyelids. That was really, but that made all the difference. Anyway, I sold those at a store in Hermosa Beach that was along the Strand. And I made great money selling those and making those. It
we need
great.
To go on like Poshmark or eBay and look for those T-shirts.
Oh, I wish.
Right? Because
yeah.
Fabian didn't think to save one.
No, none.
His beautiful art.
Nope.
All right, guys. Listen, it's movie time. Here we go.
We had so many great movies in 1984.
Oh, my
I mean,
gosh.
That's,
so
talk
exciting.
About it being my jam year. I mean,
right?
that was, yeah, I mean, that was
How
huge.
Old were you in 1984? If you can say it.
I was.
When's your birthday?
July. I was 19.
I was 13 going on 14. I am 13 going on
You really were?
14.
God, I'm fucking old.
You're not really old. I mean, yeah. I'm right behind you.
Anyway, some really, really great movies. I mean, huge. And how many of these have been remade? Let's look.
Oh my gosh.
Beverly Hills Cop with
so
Eddie Murphy,
great. So
Nick
great.
Nolte.
That was a great movie. Nick Nolte.
It was Nick Nolte. And wait, and Eddie Murphy wasn't supposed to be the lead. They changed it at the last minute. I remember
Seriously?
Reading something about it. Yeah. Eddie Murphy was brought in. It was two white guys. Eddie Murphy was brought in at the last minute.
Oh my gosh, I wish
it would have been a completely different film without him.
That's amazing.
Ghostbusters, another huge, I mean, come
I
on.
I loved
Bill
Ghostbusters.
Murray. The second installment of Indiana Jones series, Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, which I loved. I liked it more than the first one, even.
Oh, that's the one I least liked, even though I love Kate Capshaw. Big
yeah.
fan.
Oh, no, I love
that. I love her. Her directorial debut was The Love Letter with, who was in The
what
Love
do I
Letter?
Know that? Why do I know
well,
that?
Well, she self-starred, and then Tom Selleck was her love interest, and Ellen DeGeneres worked at the bookstore, and a lot of great. You should watch it.
I don't think I know that one.
Really great sleepy movie. The Love Letter.
Especially if having found out that all this time I thought for sure Tom Selleck was gay. All this time.
Really?
I was positive of it. It was
so obvious that he was heterosexual.
Really? Why is that? Have you seen his wife? She is. She looks like the biggest beard ever.
Mickey Rourke was going to originally be in Beverly Hills Cop.
That's right. And he decided not to do it because he did. I think he ended up doing Angel Heart. It was 9 and a Half Weeks.
Now that's a movie I can get behind.
Yeah.
But listen, regarding Tom Selleck's wife, we can't help how we're born. We can't.
No,
help
she's adorable, but she. If you look at pictures of her every premiere, she would be with him. And she looked like she weighed about 95 pounds.
She did. Correct.
Tiny.
Correct.
And she just looked like a beard. She looked like.
You think so?
To me, she did.
You know the famous story when Elizabeth Taylor saw Tom Selleck walking across like Beverly Hills pool.
Mm-mm.
She saw him walk across at like 20 something, and she said, "That man is going to become a major star."
Well, she was absolutely right. He's so handsome.
A lot of pointing going on.
So handsome. But anyway, I don't know why. I thought it was a known thing. You see, it just shows you don't.
He is not a gay.
He's not a gay. So my mother said, I think so. He's not a gay.
Your mama.
You know, it's a great movie.
I could meet her.
Romancing the Stone.
Okay.
I love that movie.
Adored every single
Me too.
Solid, like
the humor was so good. Kathleen Turner turning
into the sexy Kathleen when he lands headfirst into her crotch, the rain,
all of
the
it.
Mud, Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
All
it was so
of
good.
It. It's a fantastic.
Which made me love, I mean, and when they did War of the Roses, which is being made into a series, I think now it's being remade.
You know, I've never watched War of the Roses.
What? Oh.
I need to watch it
tonight, actually.
And what's the one, isn't there one with Jack Nicholson? Something honor, somebody's honor.
What's it about? With
mob
who?
Mob guy, Kathleen Turner, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, wait. Yes,
Pritzi's
of course.
Honor.
I just watched it with my sister 2 weeks ago.
Pritzi's Honor.
Pritzi's Honor.
Yeah.
What a.
That's a great
flick. It's not the greatest movie, but I got to tell
good.
You.
It's good.
Everybody is so good in it. And Angelica Houston had already broken up with Jack Nicholson when they made that film.
I feel like she deserved more. I really did.
Well,
she really did.
Yeah, I'm sure. Purple Rain. Come on, are you kidding? Purple Rain.
Yes, Purple Rain.
Incredible. Splash.
I have to. Yeah, we can't.
Splash
go,
made Tom
on,
Hanks.
Splash.
Tom Hanks
John
became
Candy,
a star because
Tom
of that.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, he went from TV to movies, and there was
he
no
really
going
did.
Back.
And I just loved it. And maybe it was my age, but Purple Rain. First of all, not only the movie, but the song. Like to this day, when
that whole
song
soundtrack
is played,
that
like
whole
Prince,
soundtrack. Yeah.
Whether or not he was a dick to Sinead, which I might never forgive, but he was amazing and incredible. And
he was a musical genius for sure.
Harvey Korman is
for
come
sure.
to say hello. Listen, we need to talk about number 12.
Amadeus.
It's funny because last night, everybody, Fabian's like, I'm watching Amadeus, or maybe it was the night before, but I had just watched it like a week before. And L. Murray Abraham.
F. Murray Abraham.
L. F.
Yeah.
You know, he was in the Grand Budapest Hotel. He's just
he
one
was
of those...
in the White Lotus. This
oh,
last, remember?
Absolutely.
I mean, he was great in it.
Oh.
He looks amazing. And it could be because the makeup that they used in Amadeus, because they aged him.
They aged him.
So,
but he looks better in real life aging
incredible.
Than he did in the movie.
Yeah.
But his, like, I get the I can't remember who plays.
Tom Hulce.
Tom Hulce was wonderful. The wife was wonderful. That,
yeah.
But Abraham Murray?
F. Murray Abraham was.
Thank you.
He was the shit. One look. He had those looks. Of just,
and he would just,
he was boiling over with envy.
And when the camera would, when they would cut to him and the camera would go right here and he would wax on.
Yeah.
It
no,
was
he was
so
amazing.
So
it,
amazing.
It really, I mean, it really is about
And it
him.
Holds up.
It's
and
about
it,
him.
And it holds up, guys.
It's
that
definitely
movie
should
definitely
be called
holds up.
Yeah, it was great.
Salieri, right.
Salieri.
That's Salieri.
Did you ever see, 2010, The Year We Make Contact?
I remember 2001. Was 2010, did that include where the guy speaks? Yes, 2010.
Is the one with Roy Scheider. Roy fucking Scheider.
As you know, Fabian and I have daddy issues with Roy Scheider.
I've not seen 2010, though. I've never seen this movie, and I want to see it just because of Roy Scheider.
Well, I feel like, because remember, in 2001, the astronaut goes missing. If I'm not mistaken, and I very well could be because I'm not really a sci-fi, but what I remember specifically... was he's talking to Roy Scheider about what happened to him, and he talks about life and everything, and he goes from like birth to death and like in the womb. It was a beautiful picture of an actual baby in a womb with a white background.
I remember that and the ads and stuff.
Yeah, that's that same movie. Yeah.
You know what's another great movie from that year? The Natural. Do you know what that gave us?
Oh.
Who was the introduction for us? One of her very first films, if not her first, maybe her second film. Glenn Close.
She was incredible.
I think she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Who's the guy that played the coach?
I have no idea. I don't remember anything other than her.
I've got diabetes.
Do you know that Wilfred Brimley was only like 45 or 50?
I know.
In all these movies, he always played old. Do you remember the movie with the old people?
Cocoon.
Cocoon?
Yes.
He was 50 playing this senior citizen. It's sad.
It's so crazy.
It is.
But guys, The Natural, I mean, it's like the 1940s.
Yeah.
In fact, Kolchak plays the announcer.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Wow, how funny. Whose name escapes me. I'm having more gin stutters.
And he's not even drinking.
I like to call
him
memory stutters.
He's not even drinking.
You know, Kolchak, the Night Stalker.
The Night Stalker.
It was a TV show in the 70s.
Darren McGavin plays one of the announcers. Yeah. And I think Robert Duvall might be in there as well.
Yes,
and, of course, the great Robert Redford. Shout out to my nephew, Michael, who I would, when he was young, spent a lot of time with him. And I would always say, God, she looked just like Robert Redford. And it was picture day, and I made sure to do his hair that morning. And I picked him up after school. And he had a real sourpuss face on. And he got in the car, and I look in the rear view. I'm like, what's wrong? And he was really angry. He's like, he combed my hair because I used to do the quote-unquote Robert Redford wave on his hair every morning.
My God.
And he was literally in like second or third grade. And
Is he straight
it.
Now?
He's completely Jersey straight.
I can't believe it.
But he hung out with, poor guy, hung out with me for many years. Yeah. So he had all the old movie references. But his rage that they combed his Robert Redford wave out of his hair.
Oh, that's
to this
horrible.
Day, that picture. And it's also when a certain age with children, when they're incapable of smiling for their school pictures because they're nervous. So it was not only the wave was gone, but he couldn't smile. So he's just glaring.
Oh, poor thing.
It's one of my favorite pictures.
Poor thing. For a minute there, you scared me because I thought you were going to say, my nephew, I would tell him, I wish you looked more like Robert Redford.
No.
God, I wish you looked more like Robert Redford. Couldn't you look like Robert Redford? Come here, let me comb your hair.
I know. Oh my God. Michael, I love you. I don't know what this guy's talking
about. I don't know.
About.
I thought that's where it was going to go for a moment.
Oh, it was a very sweet memory I had.
What about
with him
TV
though.
Shows?
All right, we're done. Well, we can't
forget.
I have
something to say about the TV shows when you start telling me about them.
All right.
Because there's one thing in common when you start naming them off. You'll see. Some of them. Five.
Other than the music. Remember, there were a lot of primetime soap operas, guys. The first one, which I think none of us can forget if you're older than 30, or maybe now 40.
Yeah, 40.
Dallas. Remember that?
Yeah,
great
I was
one?
Never into Dallas.
Me neither. In
Not
fact,
at all.
When
I didn't somebody, like any of those CBS
when JR
shows.
Got shot, I could have given a shit.
Yeah, me too.
But
I
then
didn't care.
There he was, and right.
Everybody
who shot JR?
Everybody
that was
wanted
that
to
was
know.
The whole
and it was a
sister-in-law, TV
right? Sister-in-law.
I don't remember.
It was
even.
A sister-in-law.
That's how much I didn't
it
watch it.
It was a sister-in-law.
Right.
It was Gray, whatever her name is. What was the woman that played her sister. That I know.
Yeah.
You know what I remember? Charlene Tilton. What the fuck? Why is why is she
great.
In my head? She's about 2 feet
I
tall.
I liked her.
She's about 2 feet tall.
She reminds me of on All in the Family, Sally.
Yeah. Sally
like
Struthers.
A young Sally
she
Struthers
does.
At
Very
that
much
time.
So.
Yes.
Very much so.
Yes. What I did watch, and I'll never forget the shoulder
it
pads.
It was religious.
I'll never
it
forget.
It was a religious experience
the
for
shoulder
the
shoulder pads,
of
the
my
fights,
group.
Really.
Oh, yeah, Dynasty. We would go to bars and watch them and watch the episodes at a bar in West Hollywood
and
yell at the television and scream, and everybody just loved it.
Well, and John Forsythe, I mean, after freaking Charlie's Angels and him being in my favorite Gene Simmons movie, which I can't remember. Sorry, guys. Jesus Christ. But John Forsythe was actually not a bad actor in his day.
No.
And,
no, of course not.
Now, let's
Wasn't
talk...
Wasn't he
let's
Gidget's
talk,
dad?
Was he Gidget's
dad? Was he Gidget's
dad? No.
I thought he was in the TV... In the 60s, he was on a TV show. Okay, but just
you talk.
I just want to let you know that there was Dallas, there was Dynasty, Falcon Crest, Knott's Landing. I think three of those are all spin-offs of each other.
Right. And yeah, oh, Knott's Landing, right.
Knott's Landing. But the thing that they all had in common, and then the big shows were like Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. And there was a reason why in 1984, all of these shows, you have to think about politically.
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous was totally on back then.
Yeah. And it was during Ronald Reagan. Everything was business, business, business. That's all people cared about. Everything was about making more money. Name brands became greater. Everybody wanted Calvin Klein jeans. Everything was name brands.
Nobody gets between me and my Calvins.
Consumerism expanded. People trying to make money. So watching this, it was aspirational for most people, these TV shows. It wasn't just entertaining. It's what people wanted to be. And this is what they saw as what is success. And it makes sense that it would have been.
No, that's totally true.
And also in the 80s, there were more women working. There was more women in the workforce. And so to see
nine to five wasn't just right.
And to see women in Dynasty who are powerful and bossy and that was a big deal.
I can't find confirmation whether he did play Gidget's dad.
Well, you keep
but
telling
the movie
us about...
that I was talking about with Gene Simmons, which I've mentioned in the podcast before, it's not the greatest movie you're ever going to see, but it's just damn good. It's called The Happy Ending. And I thought he was a wonderful actor in that. But we're digressing.
I have a whole other idea of what that happy ending would be.
Well, I know you do, but Sunday, lie down.
No, he was not in it, just FYI.
He was. That's what I had a feeling.
He was not.
But I just, Linda Evans, you know, that whole, who was the husband? John Derek.
John Derek. Who he had,
you know, he just replaced each wife with another.
They were all clones.
Right.
Ursula Andress. Bo Derek.
But Linda Evans, like Bo Derek was gorgeous, but Linda Evans was beautiful also when she was young.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not a huge John Derek fan, but I did like his 80s hairdo.
He is what you would refer to as a Svengali.
Correct.
Yes.
Now, the A-Team was redone. You know, Liam Neeson. Jesus Christ.
And Bradley Cooper, right?
Is that burning toast? Am I stroking? No. Anyway, I loved that show
I never
when
watched
I was that
it.
Age.
It just,
I was just, it was, there was nothing on TV.
But you were younger. It made sense
and
for
And I
you.
Was younger. Simon and Simon, also one I
nope,
didn't really
me
watch.
Neither.
But now back to Tom Selleck. Do you know that the British guy...
I never
guy,
watched Magnum P.I. either.
There was that British guy.
Yeah,
that
yeah, from, the butler.
He's from the South. It was a fake British accent.
That's hilarious.
Which I was shocked at when
That's
I
funny.
Heard that. Knott's Landing, I didn't watch. Did
me
you
neither.
Watch?
No.
Okay. 60 Minutes. Well, that must have premiered, I guess, in those years, is my assumption.
I don't know.
I don't think it was
Maybe
the 70s.
It was just super popular. But Cheers, come on.
Oh, my God. Ted Danson, come dance with me. I mean, every
Woody
single
Harrelson,
thing that he's done.
Everyone in that.
Woody Harrelson. Shelley Long, I want to not hate. I don't hate on her
but
at all.
But it's her
like,
character,
it was
too,
her character,
right?
Exactly. You know, we mentioned earlier, and I meant to delete this earlier, sorry, but The Cosby Show debuted in 1984, and this sitcom centered on the Huxtables, an affluent African-American family, and I remember at the time that was, like, unique unto itself,
it
became, like, a major hit. One I added premiered September 16th. Shout out to Shannon Kelly. That was her birthday, Shannon Jimenez. Miami Vice. Let's just talk for a minute about Nagel, the colors, the suits, Miami.
The neon, all of it.
All of it. Like that
the
show
pastels,
rocked. And I was
the
younger.
Suits
like,
with
so
t-shirts.
Older, did you like it? Or was it because I was younger that I loved that show so much?
I didn't love that show.
So I think it's again because I was younger.
No, I think also heterosexuals. I didn't love it. It was not.
Didn't talk to you.
Not like Dynasty. Dynasty was made for the gays.
All right, now, guys, we're going to talk about music from 1984.
I am, by the way, accumulating and putting together a playlist of songs
Yay.
From 1984, but this is the key. I am not doing the original versions because that's too easy and too boring.
I
I'm
have
doing,
to agree.
They're all
I
covers.
Love it. Oh, I love covers.
They're all covers.
And that might come out in a few days from now where we, we might release earlier the podcast, but the But we can send the playlist
It'll
out
be,
when it comes
It's going to be a good one.
Especially because it's
started
the finale.
It. I've already started it, and it's going to be great.
Wonderful.
Okay. We know the songs that we love. Which songs do we hate? Because When Doves Cry, number one, of course. Number two,
Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do with It? Give me a break. That is the best.
So I watched the Billy Joel concert. Did you catch it?
On
what? So here's Paramount.
No.
River Deep, Mountain High. Are you familiar?
Of course.
Tina Turner's version.
Yes.
It was covered, and I made Peter. Who covered it? I don't know. An unknown.
You mean Billy Joel covered it?
No, he had a female, beautiful. Why? I was running around. Because she fucking nailed it, babe.
But why? What does Billy Joel have to do with it? Was he singing along?
Yeah, he was playing the piano along with it. I'm just saying, he knew that the song is amazing.
Yeah.
Right? Or it is. Are you offended that
Great. I just don't get the Billy Joel connection. Why he had
I was a little girl, had a rag doll.
It's an amazing song.
It's a great song.
It's an amazing, amazing song.
It's really one of my favorites.
But no one does it.
I'm sorry.
No one
does it like Tina Turner, who was the queen of, I would say, the 1980s pop, right?
Say. Remember that? Michael Jackson, Paul McCartney.
Yes, I do.
Wasn't that the one that he had his sister, LaToya? It was LaToya in that video, and it was kind of like his love interest or something.
It was odd.
Very fucking creepy.
Those Jacksons are a little kooky.
You know what movie I've never seen and I never care to?
Footloose?
Never.
Never.
Never. I can't stand that song.
I love Kevin Bacon.
I love Kevin Bacon.
I love the guy that sings the song that lives in town.
I don't.
Kenny Loggins. You don't like Kenny Loggins?
No.
I saw him at CVS. He's very nice. I see a lot of people at CVS too, like Jeff Bridges, Kenny Loggins. Really?
No.
You're not impressed?
I don't like his music.
So therefore you don't like the man?
I worked setting up a auditorium where he was going to do a benefit concert with Manzanera, was the other guy, the guy from The Doors that lived here at that time. And we had to make the stage and put rugs and make it look beautiful and look amazing. And I begged because Dave wanted to see this thing, that to be able to get seats to see this.
Yeah.
I didn't go. We called Dave's cousin, who was Kenny Loggins, big time. She sees every show he does. She'll fly to any city. She is his biggest groupie.
So it's mainly because of the music, not the
man.
Because by all accounts, he's nice.
Yeah, no, the music does nothing for me.
I understand that. I really do.
At all. There's a
lot
of guys like that.
Neither of us saw Footloose.
They kind of fall into the same category. I have a lot of, I'm sure they're super nice guys. What's the other guy that lives here in town? The musician that is a teacher that everybody loves. Jack Johnson.
Right?
Yeah. No.
Same.
Can't.
Same.
Just,
Fabian.
The music does not affect me. Touch
that was
me
like
in
a total
anyway.
Sylvester from the cartoon. I totally agree.
Yeah. It's true though. That just.
That's,
you know what,
interesting though that we don't, we have this similar.
You know what is it?
No offense to those guys. They're wonderful. But
unlike Bruce Springsteen, for example, I can listen to Bruce Springsteen all day long. I love Bruce Springsteen, and Dancing in the Dark was a great video. At the time, I was not that into it because it was
And I wouldn't say that I'm like the quintessential Bruce Springsteen fan. I am from Jersey, so of course. And also, he was from Freehold, Metuchen area, which is where my aunt lived. And that song loved.
Not Kath.
Aunt Teresa, Kath's sister.
Oh, wow.
Who my brother Chris insists would purse her lips in the same way that Milton Berle would. So we had a whole conversation. No, they're never going to listen, so it's okay. But she looked just like Milton. But we've moved on. Can we talk about Against All Odds with Phil Collins?
Yeah.
Because Jeff Bridges and Rachel Ward are in that, and I freaking...
He was so beautiful
in it. Again, it could be my age.
No, he was beautiful in it.
Jeff Bridges in that movie.
He was gorgeous.
I mean, it's not at all like, James, the Republican James. There's a guy in it.
Who's the guy in it?
Anyway, he's very, not that there's anything wrong with being a Republican, she says.
Who is the guy? Oh, God, him. God, I can't stand him. The one that was with from Blade Runner. Look at us. Our memory, we are terrible. Sean. He was with Sean. What's her name? Sean.
Where is he?
Sean
Blade Runner, yes,
Sean,
yes,
whatever
Sean.
Her name is. They were he blackballed her.
He blackballed her.
Yeah.
Why is he not even listed on
the
cast?
Really, what is his name? I
Spader? No, not
no,
Spader.
No,
James Woods.
James Woods. I can't stand him.
He
I don't
was
know.
Addicted because you know you shouldn't. No, I know, and it's not politically. Anyway, I needed to bring up Against All Odds, and she'll never listen. But Colleen Hunt, this is for you. Because we went to the movies and we were obsessed with it. Anyway, go on.
D- two Cyndi Laupers on there, which was really great. Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Girls and Just Want to Have
Fun. After time, time After Time.
Time After Time.
Come on. After Time. That song, by the way, in making this playlist, Time After Time has been redone by some of the very greatest singers.
Fabian, do you remember the Kodak commercials at Christmas time?
Of course.
So a couple years after this was a hit, it was... She did Time After Time.
Was it Time After Time? No, it was True Colors.
It was True Colors.
God, I'm gay. Jesus Christ, I'm gay. I'm a gay.
I can't believe I got that wrong.
It's True Colors. But you know what's weird is that I didn't even know that. I would never have remembered that if you hadn't said it. The minute you said that, I was like, no. It had to be True Colors.
It's true.
It's True Colors. That would be 2 or 3 years later after that, I think, too.
Absolutely.
Anyway, there were a lot of them. You know what was a really great one? And I highly recommend everyone go online, go YouTube, Laura Branigan, self-control, and watch the shit show that is that video with all these people. It's like watching Eyes Wide Shut. It's all these people in masks and leotards doing interpretive dance that's supposed to be sexual, and they wouldn't play it. They wouldn't play it on TV because it was too X-rated, and they played it on the Merv Griffin show. I remember watching the Merv Griffin show.
Was Merv horrified?
Merv Griffin or Michael Douglas? It was one of those two. Wasn't Michael Douglas?
Michael Douglas had the show.
God, I love that show.
Wait, not Michael Douglas. It was somebody
else. Something Douglas.
Yes, but Michael?
I thought it was Michael. I don't know what it was. Anyway.
The Douglas show.
Showing the video, and it was like a big deal that this is the only place you're going to get to see it.
So
YouTube it.
Fabe, when did Flashdance come out? Because Flashdance
was 1983, I believe, because I went to see that with... I went to see that movie with the only woman I've ever slept with.
Why couldn't it be me?
Before Kathy. We slept together. This was before the accident. Before the horror had happened.
The horror. Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it happens. Shit happens when you're drunk and happy and watched that movie wonderfully.
And you break your arm ice skating and you don't know that it's broken at the time.
Gloria.
It's too much trauma. I'm triggered.
So, Fabian's microphone just went down.
Oh, God, it must be making so much
We're so
sound.
Sorry.
I
tried to make it better for him.
You know what?
And
I want
made
you guys
it worse.
To know. I want you guys to know that I'm not having any gin today. So.
No, and he's completely sober. It's true. I think it's my fault. I think
I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to. There we go.
There we go. Okay.
All right. Anyway, there's tons of songs, you guys, and you're going to hear a lot of them, a lot of covers on our playlist that will come out maybe at the same time you're listening to this or maybe a day after, but it will be there.
I just call to say
beautiful song.
I love
and you know what's
you.
Weird is you never think about that being the 80s. Doesn't it seem like it's more of a 70s?
Was that
classics?
From the Gene Wilder Woman in Red movie with the beautiful model that was married to Steven Seagal? No, it was a crappy movie, but...
She's still around.
She's luscious, yes. And we can't go on without... No?
Yeah.
What was it you didn't like?
I just saw her in something, actually. I just saw her in a photograph or something. She's gorgeous. She's gorgeous.
She hasn't... Who? 99 Left Balloons. We can't move on without mentioning 99.
Nana.
Well, I guess I'm talking about the English version, 99 Red Balloons, right? Was that the same year? They just...
Yeah. 99 said Luftballons. Yeah. And Lionel Richie had two hits. I mean, Lionel Richie was the shit. He really was. This was, you know, probably that following year. Following year when he hosted the American Music Awards or whichever one it was, remember?
Right.
And he kept saying outrageous. It was his tagline, outrageous. Because he was the shit. He was huge.
Hello, is it me you're looking? I mean, he
There's
did
a lot.
White Nights. What was the song from White Nights that was amazing?
Oh, I can't remember.
He basically was the singer of that.
You know which one I hated?
Period.
All Night Long.
I hate it
that
so much.
So much.
It was overplayed.
You know what
and
else
also
I hate?
Not great.
That year, Duran Duran came out with The Reflex, you know, which was the follow-up to the Rio album. It was from their new album.
Oh, and Rio was before
sucked.
That.
Yeah, that song sucked. I hated it.
Which song,
The Reflex.
the reflex, and they kept doing these little dubbing.
Yeah.
It was not good. Okay.
Hey, for the Pointer Sisters, jump for my love, jump in.
I met them.
I liked you. Of course you did.
Yeah, but
of
I was course. Only 10. I was 10.
Were they nice to you?
They were super nice. It was for the March of Dimes telethon.
Aww.
Where I got to meet, I think I've told you this before, I got to meet Betty White and Tony DeFranco. Tony DeFranco and the DeFranco family, remember them? It's a heartbeat. Remember? They were like the Osmonds of their time.
Yes.
And Shazam. Shazam from the TV show. Shazam. Not the kid that played Billy Batson, but the actual hot guy.
Fabian.
At the KTTV television station in Hollywood.
How?
Because at school, my elementary school in Hollywood, we had, after school, we would do Mexican folklore dancing, and this was a telethon, so they'd have local schools come perform.
Fabian, that's awesome.
I would love to
find... Being an Argentinian, watching you do Mexican folklore dancing is fascinating.
Anyway, and I was really good at it.
Dude, could you do it now, like if I asked you?
I have
you?
A little bit, yeah. I had brown wooden platform shoes, because you need to make a lot of noise, and corduroy... Burgundy corduroy bell bottoms with rickrack trim along the side and bolero jackets. Little bolero jackets with button-down shirts.
Say no more. I'm in.
I mean, the jacket. I would kill for that jacket. I actually made myself a jacket.
Was that your mom doing that, or was that you choosing that?
No, it was me. My sister and I both did it.
But
my
mom choosing wanted, the clothing. Choosing
no,
the clothing.
No, that was the uniform we all had to wear. Everybody
oh
had.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So some designer knew what was freaking awesome.
Oh, it was great. It was of its time. It was great.
Oh, are there pictures?
Oh, yes.
Please,
I will show you. Oh,
please.
For sure.
That's
for sure.
Awesome.
I had the cutest hair. I had bangs.
Oh.
My hair was your color. I was blonde with bangs. I look like a girl. I'll leave you with
Fabian.
This. I'll leave you with this. That same, no, the year prior, I went dressed was what I thought was Dracula. I wore my mom's burgundy velvet cape that she had, you know, because that's what people had then. Burgundy velvet cape. And I had the fake teeth, and I'd go trick-or-treating with my siblings.
Right.
And everyone would say, oh, Little Red Riding Hood, with my fucking teeth, because everyone thought I was... a little girl with my cute hair, my long hair.
Oh, you were beautiful.
I was so beautiful.
Peter, too. There are some men that are just beautiful when they're young.
Yeah. And then look at us. We become these monsters, these
ogres. Stop it.
All right.
Guys, some famous people born in 1984. Please excuse Harvey drinking water. One of these days, we're going to sound fully professional from start to finish
in one of these podcasts.
For
fun.
God's sakes. I tried to find famous people born in history, but then, you know, historically, but, you know, there just wasn't much that came up. As it is, famous actors and such, Olivia Wilde, Mandy Moore, American Ferrara, all born in 1984. And
this one's crazy.
Mark Zuckerberg.
It's kind of great that he's born the day that, you know, in the year that Macintosh.
Oh, yeah.
You know, computer is.
There is some kind of poetry to that. Yeah. Yes. Scarlett Johansson, gorgeous.
Oh, my
gorgeous
God. And what a singer.
Species.
What a voice. I love her.
She seems really cool, too. She doesn't seem like she's an ass. Avril Lavigne, another one that doesn't seem like an ass.
Katy Perry,
lives
really?
Here in town.
I didn't think she was that old.
Aubrey Plaza, one of my absolute favorites.
Fucking
I'll watch
amazing.
Anything she's in. Claire Foy, also wonderful.
Who's Noel Fisher?
Some guy. I had
just
to. There were so
this,
many
but
women
he's
that
in
I.
Something now. I just saw that he's starring in something.
Well.
And who's Theo
James?
Theo James.
He's the one that's the next Brad Pitt, George Clooney, the one I talked about. White Lotus. The Gentleman, star of The Gentleman, and he was in White Lotus.
Oh, he is a babe. Oh, he's a babe. And LeBron James. Wow.
Noel Fisher is a Canadian actor.
What's he in?
Well, he was in...
Let me see.
Twilight, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And Shameless. I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't know who he is.
LeBron James, also.
In Capone. That's where I saw it. Because Capone is playing. He's in Capone.
Tom Hardy's... Wait, Capone?
Yeah.
Tom... Wow.
Tom Hardy plays Capone.
Oh, I was thinking Truman Capote.
You know who died? Speaking of Truman Capote in 1984? Truman Capote died in 1984. You know who else
That's
died?
Crazy.
Marvin Gaye tragically died in 1984. And you know who else we just mentioned? Richard Burton also died in 1984.
You wonder what Elizabeth was, how she processed that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been hard. She was used to it, though. She had a lot of loss in her
life. Mike Todd was the love of her life, as I understand it.
She had so many friends that had died, and that's terrible.
Mm.
All right.
Anyone else dead?
No, that's it. Anyone else dead? No. That's it.
All right, guys. We've come to the portion of the podcast for Fabian and I to give people our pockets of wisdom for advice sought. I've often said before, please submit any questions that you want for us to both answer, because we're getting really good at it.
And we're full of opinions.
We really are.
Yeah.
Pocketspod@gmail.com. That's pocketspod@gmail.com. Please write in and let us give you our pockets of wisdom. I'm going to start. I've mentioned before that we use the British term agony auntie and uncle. So here we go. Dear agony auntie and uncle, back in 1984, coincidentally, I had a high school sweetheart, and we shared what seemed was a timeless love. After graduation, life led us on separate paths, and now, nearly 40 years later, we've reconnected. Discovering that we still have feelings for each other has been both surprising and heartwarming. However, I'm currently in a marriage that has lost its spark and feels more like a companionship devoid of any romance. My high school love is single and willing to pick up where we left off, but I am torn about the implications of rekindling this old flame while still married. How do I navigate these complex emotions and make a decision that respects my past and my present? Torn in Tallahassee.
What do you think?
I think it's complicated. You're talking to somebody that is inherently like almost mobster, godfather, East Coast, loyal, like, they're just, that wouldn't come up. Even that, if that came up, I would maybe relish in the thought for a minute, but I would never entertain, even if any kind of, you know, physical...
Of leaving your husband and...
Ever. It would never happen.
You know, the thing that I see here is they discover they still have feelings for each other, of course, because, I mean, if you are going to reminisce and you're thinking about a relationship you had
100% 40
years ago,
how it can happen.
I still have feelings for, I remember how I felt, and I think that may be the key.
Right. That's what they're tapping into.
How you felt about yourself and about love and about sex, about all of those things.
But is
that
a reason to surrender the life that you've built with somebody, Fabian?
No, no. But you see, what I would recommend is I would talk to my husband or wife and tell them that, you know, this is reminding me, talking to my high school love is reminding me of what it was like. And maybe if these spouses in the beginning of their relationship might have felt the same thing. He says they've lost their spark. So,
but how would you honestly, Fabe,
you try to find that spark again.
Let's say that happened to you. Dave comes to you and says, listen, I found this. How would that make you feel?
Well, I mean, you'd probably be asking me in jail because I would have...
That's what I'm saying. That's
no,
what,
I wouldn't.
The truth
I wouldn't.
That's
no, I
the
wouldn't.
Thing.
But
yet, however, you and I are you and I. There are other people that maybe...
No, but you
I
see,
just don't
I would tell
like
them the same thing. If he said that... No, if Dave came and told me that exact thing, oh, you know what, I found my old boyfriend and I would say, what is it that you think... What is missing between us that you're going to get?
Right.
What can we do to make that? As if he doesn't hate me, if we
still
love each other.
I feel like it would be a fracture that wouldn't be...
No, because it can make your relationship so much better. It can make
you... A cancer husband? I don't know. Sensitive.
But it can make your relationship even better. It can make your sex life better because...
That's true.
Suddenly you realize...
Could ignite something.
That what you're willing to throw away, what you're willing, you know...
Because you're right. You're absolutely right. Like, in life, people are going to have feelings. And there's relationships in the past or emotions in the past that... have stuck with you.
But
and...
we also romanticize our past.
Right.
So we can look back and think, you know, the boyfriend that I had when I was 18, man, that was great. But you know what was great? Because at 18, or 16, whatever age for whoever, how old you are, the first time you have sex, the first time you kiss, the everything, and you're a teenager and your hormones and everything is 100 times stronger and more amazing.
Right.
So yeah, of course you're gonna.
Yeah.
And we romanticize it
on a human level.
We,
of course.
We you know it's a we don't look at the pain that we suffer.
Right.
We don't. We're
right,
only looking at the happy and the beautiful and the titillating and all of that. So that's what I would try to encourage a person to be realistic and realize.
So bring it up to
just
maybe
because you're with that person doesn't mean you're going to feel all those things again because you're not that person.
Right.
One. Physically, you're not that
person. Right, and I was going to say, like, even if they met up, it doesn't mean that it's going to be that
magical
situation.
That the sex is
going to
be great. It's going to, no, nothing. Or that their spark or their chemistry is going to be the same. They might have things that bug each other that they have no idea.
But what's interesting is, so anyway, guys, I think Torn in Tallahassee, what is your advice, Fabian?
My advice is to really think about what it is that you think that spark is that's missing in your relationship with your spouse. And try to remember why it is you're feeling it with this person from 40 years ago. How do you get that back with your spouse? If you're not hate, they don't, he says, is it a he or she? He, right?
Yeah, it's a.
They, whoever.
Whoever it is. No, but I think you're right, Fabian.
They don't, they love their partner. They said that they love their partner. So, I mean, that's, if they said they hated their partner and they can't stand
it would
to
be
together.
It was abusive or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. It would be very different.
The whole thing has nothing to do with meeting up with somebody from 40 years ago. This letter to me is about someone saying, I've been with my spouse and we've lost the spark.
Right.
And now I'm tempted because I'm remembering something.
Exactly.
And that's what I think.
And that
is
a totally human reaction. But I think absolutely marriages can suffer from spark outage and they can be reignited with, you know, with this kind of situation. You can
reignite. Yeah, he says that it feels like a companionship devoid of romance, what he has now in the present.
Right.
So make it romantic.
And that can, that if you work at it, you can reestablish that. And I think I've mentioned this before, but it is one of my favorite quotes. To be in a long-term partnership means to have attended 1,000 funerals. For who you each have been.
Right.
And I think it's important
so
to like acknowledge that, that things just change with age.
Yeah. And it's not just funerals. I mean, it's also christenings or whatever you want to call it because...
Rebirths, you're right.
There are things that...
Yeah.
They're new versions of us.
Absolutely.
Things that we didn't even know we had within us.
That's a more positive spin on
it. There's
both
of those things. Okay, my turn.
Okay.
Dear Agony Auntie and Uncle, I have been with my girlfriend for 3 years. We live together and get along really well. We're very open with each other. We also use each other's phones. No big deal. But we don't go through each other's phones. I've never gone through her text messages, and I assume she has never gone through mine. I recently used her phone because mine was in our car. I was looking something up when a text message came in from her sister, and I could see my name mentioned in the notification. So I clicked on it and saw an entire conversation with her sister about me. I was completely shocked by what I saw. She criticized my looks, my habits, and even our sex life.
Mm,
she referred
terrible.
To me by a really offensive name. It was just a stream of terrible and awful stuff. Now, I'm not sure what to do. I love her and don't want to break up. Maybe she was just upset about something and venting. Am I being foolish to want to stay with her? Dumped on.
Mm, gosh, you know, I'm initially going Jersey on this. Like, I'm out. Like, you're going to talk about me like that. I'm out. I deserve something so much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, I feel like it's such a betrayal. You know, I knew somebody that was on the phone with his wife and they hung up and her phone didn't hang up and he heard her listen to her just bashing him to their children. And it was really like...
Oh, that's horrible.
It's just... It's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Yes, you tell your sister, you tell close friends frustrations in a relationship and you share things that, you know, you don't share with the group or the world or whatever. But this seems like really like specific, like to criticize his looks, his habits, their sex life.
And that's just in that one text. So imagine
I mean,
if it were me personally, I would so go through that phone. I'd want to know what else she'd been saying about me because that could just be the tip of the iceberg. You know,
it's, and the other thing that's interesting is, you know, she's telling her sister, right, Fabe? Yeah. So it's not like they're having an affair with somebody and telling them.
Right.
Is that even a bigger betrayal?
And why isn't she telling him these things, these disappointments? Why wouldn't she be saying our sex life sucks and she's criticizing the way he looks?
The looks is brutal. Like, you know, yes, maybe you can say, listen, you need a new haircut. But something. In general, people look how they look and you can't really change that.
Yeah.
And
I can, but yeah. Right, Dave? Yeah. But yeah, no, there's no way I would be able to stay with somebody.
I think it's cruel. Yeah, I think it's cruel. Really,
I wouldn't
cruel.
Be able to, I'd have to absolutely 100% confront her and then ask to see.
And if I didn't hear what I needed to hear, get a reinsurance that was necessary to fix it. Which is easy, you know, we're not being arrogant here. It's like, oh, I would leave. It's not easy to just pick up and leave somebody.
And he says he loves her, and he loves her.
Well, that's what's even sadder is that maybe she's just upset and venting or something. Am I foolish to want to stay with her? Like, that almost makes me sadder. Like, it's like, I want him to have some gumption, some belief in himself. But maybe he doesn't, and that could even be adding to her disdain. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would absolutely 500% confront her with it and just
think
say,
that's
look,
the thing.
This came up by accident. I didn't mean to look in your
phone. Wasn't on purpose.
But is this really how you think of me, how you feel about me, and how you talk about me? Is this it? And then he has to be honest with himself and say, how much self-worth does he have?
Right.
Is he, if she says, yeah, I do, I think you're these things. And I think that, and if he's like, okay, and he's okay with that, and he wants to stay with her, then that's a whole other issue that he should go, you know.
Counseling on some level. But I want to say, please, let me just tell you, don't stay with somebody that feels that way about you.
No.
Please don't. Even no matter how low self-esteem you have about yourself, you can forge on, start again, start believing in yourself, whether that's through therapy, through hiking, through whatever. Finding something to make yourself believe in yourself,
but don't
let her quote unquote settle on you. You deserve somebody to love you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a reminder, guys, please follow us on Instagram at pockets_podcast. Please like our page, rate and review the show on whatever platform that you listen. Also, if you want to have Fabian and I give you our pockets of wisdom, please write in to pocketspod@gmail.com. Thanks for sticking with us for 17 episodes.
Wow.
I can't believe we're on our season finale. If I haven't told you lately, I love you.
I love you too.
Thanks for doing this with me.
Me too.
I still think we're going to somehow find ourselves somewhere with this.
It's just like we were saying. We'll have some christenings or some rebirths and some resurrections and maybe a couple of funerals. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. We love you guys. Thanks for your loyalty. Thanks for listening. And we'll
see
you in a few weeks for season 2.